Are you ready?
Hey, everybody.
Hey, folks.
Hello, everybody.
People in the back.
Welcome, everybody.
Welcome to the Inner Loop.
Welcome, everybody.
Welcome to the Inner Loop.
Without further ado.
Okay, so without further ado, we're going to get started.
We should get started. We're
yeah.
We're
going to get started.
Welcome to the Inner Loop Radio. I'm Abby Newhouse.
And I'm Courtney Sexton.
Thank you for joining us. I'm excited to start co-hosting some shows for the Inner Loop Radio.
We're excited to have you. And if you haven't already, please remember to subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and check out our website at theinnerlooplit.org.
For any new listeners out there, here on the Inner Loop Radio, we delve into all things creative writing, whether that be inspiration or craft, publishing or editing, how to make a living, or just how we all sit down each day in front of an empty page.
Unless you're Abby, who has unempty pages.
Awful.
We invite friends and local writers onto the show to talk about their writing journey, what inspires them, or to delve deeper into craft.
On today's show, we want to talk writing about all things mystical.
Ooh.
There's a spectrum of what magic could mean within writing.
That's right. It could refer to talismans that we look to inspire our craft. I sometimes hold a stone.
Mm-hmm.
Or that magic of just having characters and plots kind of reveal themselves to you through the process. More literally, it can be an intricate magical system of a fantasy book, a new world and languages, etc., etc. Or a short story about characters playing light as a feather, stiff as a board, which we all did in the early 90s.
Yeah, who didn't mess around at a sleepover? We're using the term magic broadly here. No matter where your work lands on that spectrum, there's always interesting limits and expansions magic can offer in writing. Courtney, you've been exploring with fantasy worlds
lately.
How has that been going in your writing?
Should we clarify this? I'm not like a Comic-Con person. I don't mm-hmm. do the dress-ups and stuff, although I have good friends who are really into that. No, I was inspired recently by some horrible pieces that I call romantic fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just romantifant.
I've heard romanticy too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
It's all the rage.
It is all the rage. And there's definitely lots of magic. Some of you may be familiar with the Empyrean series where there's dragons. And I'll stop there. But I have never been a fiction writer. And all of a sudden, kind of these scenes that had been swirling in my head for years, actually, that I had written down started to come together around this strange fantastical plot.
Bits and pieces. Wow.
Yeah, so I thought I should follow the breadcrumb trail, as it were.
Yeah. How is magic showing up?
I don't know how to start without like going into the
really
whole
deep
thing. I mean, there are some kind of touchstones that different characters have in terms of accessing other worlds through themselves. So it's a kind of self magic, right? A magic of knowing oneself enough to know the world a little bit better. Hey, that sounds pretty good. Maybe I'll
yeah, love it.
That
elevator
anyway,
pitch.
Yeah. Enough about me. Abby, you write nonfiction.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's still magic all over in our real lives. And what's showing up for you these days?
I have been conceptualizing a few essays about this, but I think every culture has kind of its own little magic to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure.
That's kind of what I've been thinking about. And I'm from Utah, grew up a Mormon. There's a bunch of folklore, crazy stuff in our past. There's lots of like weird magic systems that like created the religion.
Yeah.
And so I've been like wanting to do some sort of essay that kind of dives into all the strange like mysticism that made a huge belief system for millions of people. It's crazy.
I mean,
but many people know about it.
I mean, most, right? If you think about most belief systems, it's so tied to magic. It's that whole paganism versus, mm-hmm. you know, like Catholicism, that whole thing. But it's like the ritual is the same, right?
Yeah,
it's just like
totally.
Toward a different goal. So there are these, I think magic like has these like repetitions and mm-hmm. chanting and that kind of stuff that also comes up in patterns in our lives.
Yes.
Right.
And in religion, it becomes so normalized. You just kind of do it every Sunday or whatever. But right. People on the outside looking in would be like, what
is that? Going
on? So I just think it's interesting. And that can pop up for like any kind of culture, any kind of religion. There's all this background, all these stories that lead into it that, yeah, just kind of provide some mysticism to everyday life.
Do you feel like in writing about magic in that way, it is also kind of forcing your style to change at all, to lean
Ooh,
into it?
Maybe. I haven't quite started it yet, but that's an interesting way to look at it. Okay. There might be some way to do some form.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, form the form function. Play into it. Yes, yes.
All right, well, we will stop our ramblings and get a little bit deeper. Coming up, we're going to talk to our Author's Corner Spotlight, Len Krueger, about how magic informs his debut novel, Bad Questions.
Support for today's show comes from the podcast Writing Excuses. Looking for a fast-paced educational podcast for writers by writers? Tune in to Writing Excuses wherever you listen. More information can be found at www.writingexcuses.com.
Welcome back to the Inner Loop Radio. We've been discussing magic and writing, and now we'd like to welcome Len Krueger, author of Bad Questions from Washington Writers Publishing House, and this month's Author's Corner Spotlight. Welcome, Len.
Thank you, Abby. It's really great to be here with you and Courtney.
We're glad to have you.
Beautiful
Absolutely.
Studio.
Hey, yeah.
No, former church.
Yes,
that's all
relevant.
Whoa. Well, in Bad Questions, the main character participates in a seance with a macabre local teacher. We thought that would be a good scene to kind of get a little entry point to. Would you mind reading us some of it?
I would be delighted.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I will read a few pages. One thing I refer to in here, which I wanted to explain, is there's a reference to Team Belgium, which is this bunch of kids in Billy's the main character. He's in junior high, and there's a bunch of kids in his social studies class. They have to do a group project on the team of Belgium. And it's, if you've ever been involved in team projects, like in school or at work, you know how that goes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
One person gets stuck with doing all the work. So
the worst.
Anyway. So in this scene, he has this kind of crazy, nutso sixth grade teacher who invites him to her apartment to do a seance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is after his father has committed suicide, so he's in a very, very vulnerable state. "How would you like to cast some spells, Billy?" she asked. "Sure." She pulled the rubber band off the puzzle box and opened it. Inside were five thick black candles. She placed one in the center of the table. "Here's how it works. There are good spells and bad spells." "Okay." "You give me a list of people, and then things happen to them." "Okay." She struck a match and lit the black candle. "Which kind of spells do you want to do?" she asked. "The good ones or the hexes?" "Which ones do you want me to do?" She smiled. "Up to you. Hexes are good for revenge." "Can I put myself on the good spell list?" "No," she said, kind of annoyed. "Doesn't work that way." "Then I choose hexes," I said. A bead of black wax slowly dripped down the side of the candle. "Okay," she said, adjusting the candle so that it was in the very center of the table. "Now, this is very serious business. A hex on someone could result in anything bad, from dying a horrible death to something like getting locked out of their house or losing their wallet. You sure you want to proceed?" "I'm sure." She stared at me, her eyes narrowing. "One more thing before we start. This is very important. If you tell anybody about this, the hex will turn on your head and you will be cursed. Do you understand?" "Yes." "Say, I understand." "I understand." "Okay, good. Give me the first name." "Bob Short," I said. "Who's that?" "He owns the Senators. He's moving them to Texas." "All right," she said, writing the same name down on a piece of notebook paper. "Who else?" "Brooks Robinson." "Who?" He's on the Orioles. I hate him. She sighed and wrote down Brooks Robinson's name. Look, she said, this will work best with people you know personally. And why is that, I wondered. Metal is metal. Why couldn't it work on anybody, whether it was someone famous or some guy down the street? Was there a rule written down somewhere? What was the law? So who else, she asked. Who did something bad to you or to someone you love? Who needs to pay for it? I thought for a few seconds. Michael Strowman, she looked at me. Just some kid at Sligo. She wrote down Michael Strowman. Who else? Mr. Pappas. He's my social studies teacher, and he gave me a D I didn't even deserve, and when I complained, he gave me an F. Done. Next. Kurt Johnson, Bob King, Julie Baines, and Steve Danielson. Team Belgium. She wrote down all the names, pencil squeaking. Who else, she said. Actually, I said, take Julie Baines off the list. Wonderful, Ms. Marvin said, putting a line through Julie Baines. Now we're going in the wrong direction. How about Harold Feinbaum? This was my father's old boss, the president of Beth Israel Congregation. How do you know about him? I asked. I know about a lot of things, she said with a smile. She added Harold Feinbaum to the list. Then she scraped some black wax with her finger and made it into a little ball. You know what, Ms. Marvin said, pulling the list towards her and grabbing the pencil again? Either this list doesn't have enough names or it doesn't have the right names. How about, she said, we put Harold's son on the list, too. Lawrence, you know him? The boy who threw the paper airplane, right? What else did she know? That if young Mr. Katz hadn't lost control of the class and if Lawrence Feinbaum hadn't thrown the paper airplane, my father wouldn't have come in and he wouldn't have been smacked in the head and the paper airplane and his yarmulke wouldn't have popped off and I wouldn't have laughed at him and he wouldn't have gotten all depressed again and killed himself? He put his faith in forces greater than science, and it worked. But then I undid all of it. Maybe I should put myself on the list. She put the bowl of wax on the top of the piece of paper and the names of the doomed on it. Now, she said, taking a deep breath, there's one more thing we must do. Are you sure you want to proceed? I guess so. Once this is done, it's done and nearly impossible to take back. Do you understand? So what happens to the people on the list? I told you, something a little bit bad or something really bad. When will it happen? It's impossible to know exactly. She put her pencil down and looked at me, her face serious. We need to summon your father. He can intercede on your behalf in order to enact the hexes. What are you talking about? I said, he's dead. She shook her head. Remember when I said our spirits inhabit past lives? Well, they continue to live beyond our current lives, too. So, I started slowly, is he in somebody else's body now? Like your ghost was in the French guy? Probably. The important thing is he's still very present. He's not gone. But what if his spirit in some other person? It would have to be in a little baby, like in some place like France. Perhaps. So if we summoned him, would the French baby have to be here, or would the spirit leave the baby? Well, obviously the baby wouldn't have to be here. But what would happen to that baby while the spirit is flying from France to Rockville? Wouldn't the baby die? Would my father's spirit have to find another baby being born someplace in the world? What if we summon him and he's got no place to go back to? Ms. Marvin rolled the black ball of wax off the list of names. Would you like me to take you home, Billy? Yes, I said. I mean, no. Metal was probably metal. But what if it wasn't?
So good. You have such a good way of like adding humor to like darkness, to sadness, like all of it mixed together.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that.
What was the inspiration behind using a seance as part of a plot?
Well, I've never been to a seance. The only seances I've ever seen have been on TV or in movies.
Len!
Let's do one right now.
Yeah,
pause.
We got to remedy this.
But I sort of come to it from the opposite direction. My father, unlike the father in this book, was a scientist, and he had boundless contempt for all this
sure.
stuff. And he used to get he subscribed to this magazine called The Skeptical Inquirer. Mm. Have you ever heard of it?
No, but now I'm curious.
It's put out by this coalition of of scientists and professional magicians.
Okay.
And their whole purpose is to question and debunk all sorts of paranormal phenomena from mind reading to faith healing to talking to the dead, all that stuff.
Sure.
And so they would run articles sort of debunking this stuff. And the magicians, they're kind of pissed off because they give this illusion of things that don't, sure. are out of the ordinary, but there's a trick. And,
right.
and they're honest about that. They're upfront about it. And then the scientists, their position is, well, maybe there is something out there, but until you prove it to us scientifically, we're not going to believe it. Burden is on you to prove this.
Yeah.
So you have them. And then on the other side, you have believers who are very passionate that, you know, there is something out there and logic is sort of, you can't really apply it to that. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work that way. So I thought about this debate between these two very different ways of looking at how the world works. Mm-hmm. And I decided to put the mother, Billy's mother and Billy's father on opposite sides of that divide.
Mm. Okay.
And so they have this big, selection I just read, metal is metal. They have this big argument about, they're watching TV, some talk show, the Merv Griffin show, which I'm sure a minute percentage of your listeners remember. And he has this guy, Uri Geller, on, who is this spoon bender. He bends spoons on TV.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And Billy's mother is like, and he says, you know, he can bend spoons, but he can't bend like things in tanks that can't be used for military purposes. So Billy's mother says, well, if he can bend metal in spoons, why can't he bend metal in a tank? And, you know, metal is metal.
Yeah.
And the father says, well, you can't apply logic to it. It just doesn't work that way. So they had this argument. And so I thought about, then you have this teacher, Billy's sixth grade teacher, who's very much into psychic phenomenon and the afterlife and things like that. So she kind of leads both Billy and Billy's father down this path. So that's where how I thought of the seance. And then the seance generates this hex list. And then the hex list generates the whole plot of the book where everything just becomes completely out of control. And it's all about Billy sort of caught in the middle of his mother's point of view and his father's point of view and just trying to figure things out.
To rectify that.
Yeah. Huh.
I mean, the book, it focuses on that childhood being kind of stuck in between a million points of view and trying to understand your own. And that also kind of has an inherent magic to it, you know,
sure.
kids just
sure.
figuring that out. So I guess tell us more about how boyhood lends itself to the themes of like the fantastical and secrets and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's not just boyhood. I think childhood in general. I mean, really, really young kids believe they have imaginary friends and they believe in Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. And then as they get older, they sort of see that it's not real. But there's this attraction for kids. And I know it was for me for the fantastical and, you know, things like that book, A Wrinkle in Time, was one of my favorite books growing up.
Yeah.
There's a C.S. Lewis books. There's, you know, all the Star Trek and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a way for kids to try not to deal right away with reality.
Some of the big stuff.
With the big stuff.
Yeah.
Which is hard. And, you know, in the book, that's kind of one of the reasons Billy becomes fascinated with the afterlife and the seance and all this stuff is it's a way for him to not deal with the really big issues he's dealing with, the death of his father, and starting a new school and all the pressures that he's under, which are really too much for a 12-year-old to really deal with.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have kids who are into the imaginary and the fantastical. And, you know, obviously some people are fascinated with that for the rest of their lives.
Sure.
And then you have the secrets and questions that they're asking. The kids are just trying to figure out, as Billy is, you know, what is this all about?
Logic of the world?
Exactly. How does this work? And there's a scene where the father is talking to Billy about the spiritual world that you can't see, and he compares it to the teacher's room in school.
You
know, these teachers they're talking about all the kids, and it's this whole world that the kids can never know. And the father says, what if you could get into that teacher's room and find out what they were talking about? Just imagine how great that would feel. And it sort of compares that to, you know, going beyond this sort of rational, empirical world that we just see and experience.
Len, these are such, you know, as we've said, you know, childhood is this inherently magical time, but these are such kind of specific moments that I've forgotten all about until you just said that, like mm-hmm. the teacher's lounge, right? Yes. That was this like off limits, like, ooh, what happened back there?
You know? I know.
But like, how did you, how did these things come to you in thinking about the book in a magical way?
Well, I mean, with the teacher's lounge, you would always walk by and the door might be ajar as someone that's just coming in, and you always look in to see what was going on. Mm-hmm, and yes. Back in my day, this is like the 60s, they're always smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, totally.
Because you can just imagine. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of the magic, it's just a way for kids to just try to figure things out in a, and it has a lot to do with magical thinking too.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I mean totally. That just, I'm sorry to interrupt you, how much of tapping into you, the magic you saw in your own boyhood was involved in this? The practice of even tapping into your own memories of being in school and those teachers in the lounge smoking cigarettes, you know, like, I feel like in writing, that is one of the magical things, right? That we can access those worlds that are now in the present day, other worlds, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you do that so beautifully.
Through imagination, you can, and that's the great thing about writing fiction, you can take things that happen to you, take little scraps of memory,
mm-hmm.
and then you can just ask yourself, well, what if this had been different? And yeah. What's the path that you would follow from that? And that's, you know, with this teacher, I did have kind of a weird teacher in sixth grade who used to do a lot of kind of a lot of bizarre things. I mean, she did tell us that our minds would snap at some point in our lives, just for a little bit, or maybe for a lot, or the rest of our lives. You know,
I mean, probably not wrong.
Probably not wrong, but it's
already happened.
It's
probably
the fact that I remember that shows you what kind of impact that had.
Absolutely.
She was also really into the macabre. She would read us Edgar Allan Poe stories.
Okay.
Red Mask of Death.
Yeah, that's
And I don't know if I saw this or someone told me about it. When she got to the part where there's all this blood gushing out of people, she started laughing hysterically.
Oh my God.
All right. Note to self.
Yeah.
So, you know, and this was like 1969. So, you know, teachers could do anything in those days.
Yeah.
She used to tease me a lot about I was kind of a sloppy as a kid. And
nice.
She wrote on I still have this too, my sixth grade picture on the back, she wrote, "To the fashion plate of the sixth grade." And my mom was not happy about that.
Oh,
I love that. That means so many of those details show up in this book.
Exactly,
so
yes. So then I thought, and then, you know, after sixth grade, I went to seventh grade, and I never saw her again,
because
there's no reason why I would, but I thought, what if goes back into his life and introduces this sort of magical element that sort of takes him down this road. I also wanted to talk about the magical thinking that he engages in, which in one example is, you know, if he knows from math, -1 × -1 = +1.
Right.
So he constructs this whole thing where if two bad things happen to me, then a good thing's a positive's gonna come out of that.
And that sounds reasonable.
exactly. And we all do that to some extent, you know, it's the magical thinking that you sort of try to anticipate what's going to happen to you, but what the fates are going to be. So
totally.
So yeah,
awesome.
Well, no more spoilers.
Yeah.
This has been such a good discussion. And you can find out more about Len Krueger and read more interviews and articles and buy his book Bad Questions on our website, theinnerlooplit.org/authorscorner, and get ready. He's got a lot coming up. You can also catch him at our upcoming agents and authors panel at DC Writer Salon on March 28th. At an author talk at the Cleveland Park Library on April 4th, and on the panel, debut authors share their publishing stories at Washington Independent Review of Books 2024 Washington Writers Conference on May 3rd and 4th at the Bethesda North Marriott. Write it all down. Len, will you stick around for a little game?
I would be delighted.
Well, up next, we're going to summon some spirits.
Yes.
Support for today's show comes from the podcast Writing Excuses. Writing Excuses also hosts 3 retreats a year, In 2024, they're going to Scotland, Minnesota, and the Mexican Riviera. Head over to their website, writingexcuses.com, to learn more and sign up. These retreats are a great opportunity to join fellow writers in seminars, workshops, and breakout sessions designed to help you hone your craft. Each retreat offers opportunities to network, game, and be in community with fellow writers.
Welcome back to the Inner Loop Radio.
We turn now to our game, Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board. Courtney, get on the ground.
Listen, I haven't done that since middle school. I say we repeat Bloody Mary three times while looking in the mirror.
Okay, but we do have to remember podcasting is an auditory medium.
A medium, get it? All right. I think we should turn to one of my personal faves and consult the tarot to inspire us.
Let's do it. Just before the show, each of us drew a card and used what it said to inspire a little flash piece or poem or whatever the magic called to us. So we'll each describe the little card we drew and read what we wrote. Who wants to start?
Oh, man.
You just volunteered by speaking.
Oh, I didn't mean to. I did not mean to do that, but you know what? I'll get it over with and maybe no one will remember it because it's so bad.
What was your little card?
My little card was, well, first of all, this is a cat tarot.
Yes, it's a very silly, cute cat tarot.
It is very cute. But I drew the Queen of Cups, and the things that were noted in this particular oracle were roses on the teacups as beauty and comfort, and this idea of self-knowledge and self-care. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
That cat looks really cozy.
Super cozy.
Yeah.
I've been thinking a lot about this recently. Actually, my mother was in town for a few days. And at this point in my life, it's a funny thing where you're transitioning to being given care to taking care.
Yes.
And so I was kind of meditating on that, but it was hitting a little too close to home. So I thought more about the idea of comfort and meditation, and this is actually nothing. So here we are.
I love it.
Under the light, I'm still. Easels are propped at various heights, faces mostly obscured behind them, a furtive erase, an occasional glance from the side. From my perch atop a small prop base, my body begins to settle, to relax into the self-imposed hypnosis. Hypnosis? And then I didn't get further than that. I occasionally pose for art classes, and it is
nice.
The only time ever in my life that I actually am able to meditate.
Oh,
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Because you kind of just have to like be still.
True.
You
don't really have an option.
Yeah.
Oh, so I love that.
It's something I do want to write about. Another time, a light bulb exploded in my face.
What?
So there are things that kind of happen. Anyway.
Yeah, that'll take you out of a meditative state real fast.
I'm going to stop.
I love it. No, that was fun. Good little intro. What do you think, you or me?
I'll go.
All right, yes. Let's do it.
So my card is, first of all, I don't think the skeptical choir would approve of tarot cards at all.
No,
many won't.
But I'm totally game. Yes, yes. So I drew the King of Wands, and there's a picture of a cat on two legs reaching for what looks like a little Geico gecko at the end of a string. And the cat looks like he's ready to disembowel it or something.
Pounce.
It's the card sort of symbolizes leadership and being a leader. So I wrote this first person narrative from the cat's point of view.
Nice.
It's sort of inspired by Game of Thrones. Hi, I'm the King of Wands. I didn't ask for this. There were complicated palace machinations, and the Emperor of Wands was deposed in a bloodless coup. I roamed the palace muttering to myself, what do my subjects expect of me? Who are my subjects? And what exactly does a wand do? I hear a rising murmur from outside the palace walls. I'm just a cat after all. Now what happens? So there's a lot of anxiety.
I mean, there is with being a ruler. What do you can do with all that power?
There's a lot of pressure. I don't know why people want to be president of the United States, but I can only imagine. It's like this cat here.
Yeah, very true.
All right, Abs, bring us home.
All right, so I got the moon, and mine is just a cat. I know, cat sitting on a fence looking down at some barking dogs and a
howling at the moon.
And a crayfish somehow. So this is nothing. It started out as nonfiction and became nothing. So here we go. My friend tells me the moon affects everything. My mood, my cells, my organs. I watch it change shape night after night, from a fingernail slice to a bulbous acorn half. I try to trace the ways my body responds, if I feel smaller or bigger, if I fill a room or stay in the corner. It matters and it doesn't, like everything people tell me is true. Standing on the fence always, I look down at either side, one a barren and knowing place, and one filled with blossoms and an aching screech.
I just want everyone to know that Abby did that in like 2 minutes.
That was extremely impressive and intimidating.
Yes, it was beautiful. And oh, your voice comes through so strongly.
That was so good. You know?
Wow, wow, really you guys. Awesome. No, I think I like cast a spell on you to believe that. So.
Maybe, whatever, it worked.
Well, thank you. Well, that was fun. Thank you guys, everyone. That's our show. And we'll be back next Monday with our Just Checking In series, where we give our writer friends a call to hear how their writing lives are going.
And if you want to learn more about The Inner Loop and all of our programming, again, you can visit us at theinnerlooplit.org, where, hey, you can also donate to support us and local literature and our tarot reading. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter /XX whatever at The Inner Loop Lit.
Today's episode was produced by me, Abby Newhouse, and Ariel Marilat. Our executive producer is Rachel Koontz, and our theme music is by Andrew Logan. Thanks again to Len Kruger for joining us on the show. If you enjoyed today's episode, shout it from the rooftops.
Or better yet, leave us a review.
Such as, "The ghost of my ancestors led me to this podcast, and it's made me reach enlightenment."
I mean, that would be but I would listen.
Right?
For sure. Don't forget to subscribe.
Subscribe!
Subscribe so you can get inspired, get focused, and get lit.
On The Inner Loop Radio.